Southeast had a record fishing season, but did the Lynn Canal? And can Southeast timber industry survive while only logging second growth forests? It's a KHNS Local News. I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Those stories and more up next. You've heard the headlines. The 2013 salmon harvest sets new records. Fishing fleet swamped with record catch of pink salmon. Booming Southeast pink return fuels biggest season on the books. There is truth to all those statements. The only problem is, Upper Lynn Canal gill netters don't see the season in quite such rosy terms. Southeast Alaska was the state's top salmon fishery this year. But for gill netters in 15C, the Lynn Canal, it was really just average. The fleet netted just over $9.2 million worth of fish this year, down from last year's record-breaking year of $15 million. That means gill netters caught about 370,000 fish less than last year. So what was so record-breaking elsewhere in Southeast this summer? It was a run of pink salmon that never really made it this far north. Other areas and gear groups get a crack at the salmon headed for places like Chilkat and Chilkoot River systems before the gill netters in Lynn Canal do, so it might seem natural that they have less chance to catch fish. But state fish managers still have to manage for escapement in these parts, and to fishermen, that means more fish should be allowed to reach the area. Bill Thomas has been fishing 44 years out of Haines. Like several 15C fishermen, he saw the forecast for the record pink run, and even bought a new net specifically to target them. But he never used it. Thomas's theory is that the state is emphasizing allocation management over sustainability.
When you have that many pinks and they're getting aggressive, they say they're managing fishing game, says they're managing for allocation. Well, you know, they're not supposed to manage for allocation. They're supposed to manage for escapement and sustainability.
Most of the record pink catch was caught by seiners, which is geared toward that fishery. Lynn Canal gill netters admit they don't normally target pinks since the effort to catch them isn't usually comparable to the price. This year, pinks made up less than 5% of the fleet's overall salmon catch, and the Chilkoot and Chilkat systems made their escapement goals of pinks. But some fishermen still think the state mismanaged the run and didn't let the 15C area share in the bonanza of pink harvest. Jason Schull is the outgoing president of the Lynn Canal Gill Netters Association.
Region-wide, there was really an abundance of pink salmon in, you know, the lower three quarters of the region. But in our stretch of the region of Southeast, there really wasn't that show of pink salmon. And so that's where it would be in the hands of the managers to make sure they communicate really well and observe and, you know, act accordingly in the areas near where the salmon happened to not be as strong in a given year.
Local commercial fishing game biologist Randy Bachman described the pink run as average for the area, as was the distribution of those salmon across the region.
This season's return of pink salmon is more normal, I would say, the distribution across the region. Typically, Southern Southeast sees more. There's more returning to that part of the region than the Northern Southeast as a whole.
The species the fleet does bank on each year is a hatchery run of chum salmon from the Douglas Island Pink and Chum Hatchery. Wild and hatchery chum made up 86% of the fleet's overall catch this year, and 98% of those were die-pack chum. That also worries fishermen like Thomas. He says the fleet has to rely on hatchery chum because the state isn't managing the wild stocks well enough to support a fishery.
If it wasn't for the die-pack chum fishery, the Lynn Canal gill netters wouldn't exist at all.
Scholl agrees, but another phenomenon that occurred this season, he says, is that those fish showed up earlier than in previous years. The 15C area opens the third Sunday of June, but Scholl said this year those chums were already in the area by early June, meaning the fleet missed some strong chances at harvest.
The chum salmon hatchery return in Lynn Canal that we concentrate on so much in, you know, the first 5 or 6 weeks of our season, we make the bulk of our annual income for sure. This year, what was different was when we started, the fish were already in the area and they'd already kind of set. And it usually takes 2 or 3 weeks for them to mill around and then hit the rocks, find their way back to Amalga and get out of our area. So we have a couple warm-up weeks typically, and then it peaks for a week or two, and then there's some cleanup, so we have a nice long season. But this year, when we started, they'd already set and they were moving along. on the shore, we only had a couple weeks on them, and then they were pretty much out of the area.
Scholl says he wants to suggest Fish and Game consider a test fishery for the early part of June if the chums keep arriving then. But biologist Bachman said that likely won't work. He agrees the run was early this year, but it's in regulation to open the third Sunday of June in order to protect the king salmon run.
Well, we're protecting king salmon, you know, in the spring, because, you know, we've been hitting our Chilkat River's game and goal, but mostly on the lower end in recent years, and it doesn't look like we're going to even be, we're not going to meet the minimum goal this year. I think we're going to be close, but not quite, for Chilkat River Chinook. So that would be a concern of mine, opening the fishery any earlier is the interception of those fish.
Disagreements over management are likely to always exist, with the firsthand experience of fishermen and the scientific data from managers never quite lining up. Bachman says escapements in the Upper Lynn Canal are healthy, and he forecasts continued strong runs. The escapement on the Chilkat was increased just a few years ago. The Chilkoot escapement plan will come up at the next round of fish board meetings. Bachman said right now he's leaning toward recommending keeping the escapement goals the same, because that's what the ecosystem can likely support.
We've had good production from escapements in the 40,000 ranges in the past, and if we have good rearing and ocean survival, you know, an escapement between 38 and 86,000 fish, I think, is appropriate. We've had some recent years where the escapement has been well above that, particularly in 2012. It was highest ever in Chilkoot. And that might be okay for the system once in a blue moon, but I don't think that's sustainable in the lake, having this, you know, just because of the food supply, and especially after a summer we had this year.
That may not be the strategy fishermen want managers to take. Thomas wants the Lynn Canal Gillnetters Association and even the Haynesboro to get more involved advocating for what he considers more sustainable and proactive management. He points out that the state constitution says resources are to be managed for sustainability or sustained yield. Bachman points out that doesn't pertain to some hatchery runs that are regulated by the purse seine management plan, which basically allows those stocks to be managed for allocation. Nonetheless, Bachman is confident the Upper Lynn Canal can maintain a viable fishery, both hatchery and wild stock, in the coming years. Fishermen like Scholl and Thomas are more guarded in that outlook, and will continue to push for what they think would give them optimal harvest while sustaining the fishery across Southeast.
Need not minimal escapement goals, but maximize the escapement so that we can have fish and the other gear group has fish and we don't have to fight every year.
Can Southeast timber industry survive while only logging second growth forests? An Oregon research group says it can. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
An organization called the Geos Institute just released a study based on new Forest Service information. It takes a look at acreage regrowing after earlier logging. The study concludes the Tongass National Forest has enough second growth stands, also called young growth, to provide a steady supply of marketable timber. Dominic Della Sala is president and chief scientist for GEOS. The Ashland, Oregon-based group advocates protecting older forests to reduce climate change.
The faster we could get the Forest Service to move out of old-growth logging, the better it will be, because the Tongass is such a global resource, and that would help with subsistence values and fisheries and the tourism that takes place on the Tongass.
The study was researched by Corvallis, Oregon-based Mader Limited. It says trees can be harvested at the age of 55. Forest Service policy considers trees ready to log at 90. Della Sala says that change, plus a few others, means the Tongass could switch to cutting second-growth trees within 5 years.
That could be harvested over the next 6 decades, at which time forests that were already harvested that are younger would be available 6 decades out into the future. So you can kind of continue this cycle of renewing the forest and going back into the second growth and harvesting it again and never have to touch another stick of old growth.
We've been harvesting second growth trees for about the last 4 or 5 years.
Rick Harris is executive vice president of the Sea Alaska Regional Native Corporation, headquartered in Juneau. Its timber subsidiary is one of its largest businesses, and it's been cutting and selling 50 to 75-year-old trees.
We've been able to get those trees into a market, and the market took them on an experimental basis, but in subsequent years, they've actually been asking for it.
Sea Alaska's logs are sold in the round to mills in Asia. Most Forest Service sales require milling before export. Harris says the study's information is useful, but the Geos Institute underestimates the difficulty of making the change.
They make a simple statement that, all we have to do is change a few rules about when second growth can be harvested. Unfortunately, that rule is a federal statute. And our experience with getting federal statutes changed is that it's very difficult. This is something that it can't be done by the administration or by the Forest Service. It actually requires congressional approval.
Sea Alaska has been trying for years to get Congress to change land selection rules so it can boost its timber base. Despite increased support, it's unlikely that legislation will go anywhere this year. Forest Service officials say they haven't fully reviewed the Geos Institute report, but the Tongass is already transitioning from old to second growth logging. Officials have said it will take 10 to 15 years, maybe longer, before enough younger trees are of marketable size. This is Ed Schoenfeld, reporting from Juneau.
For KHNS News, I'm Margaret Friedenauer. Special thanks to Ed Schoenfeld for help with this report. Thanks for joining us for your local news on KHNS. We appreciate your support.